Hello and welcome to Kitchen of My Homestead here in southern Sweden. This is Radical Simple Living and it's podcast number 18 of series 2. It's been quite an eventful day here, so I'm recording a little bit later than I normally would think of it. And it could be that there's one or two animals that are a little bit more awake than they normally are when I try and podcast. If there are too many interruptions from cats and dog, I will pause and we'll carry on later. The puppy has just wandered over to have a... Nope, she's up again. You never know what will happen. Okay. An important part of this... Oh, she's got a squeaky toy. This could be very difficult. We'll see. This podcast really is going to use the idea of a tartan very strongly. And I realise that in a large part of the world, the word tartan isn't used. In North America, the word plaid is used instead. Now, this was an education to me because I, having Scottish ancestry, pronounce the word plaid. And to me, a plaid is the blanket. If you've ever seen a picture of a Highlander, they wear a kilt and over their shoulder is draped a plaid, which is a blanket, which usually has the same design on it as the kilt does. So in North America, the word plaid has become plaid, though it's still spelt plaid, I note. And that's come to describe the design. But to me, the design is called a tartan. So I'm going to use the word tartan, but you know where I'm coming from now, don't you? Now, tartans are rather wonderful and they go a fair way back in history, not maybe as far as you would think. And what they are is a woven wool fabric and it has bands of colour in it. Now, the bands of colour aren't random. The bands of colour are worked out and there are horizontal bands and there are vertical bands. And there are points where the horizontal and the vertical cross. And when that happens, the colour is intensified. So if you've got a sort of pale green band coming horizontally and a pale green band coming vertically, where they meet, it will become a dark green band in a little square. And because these things are so wonderful and they were easy to... fairly easy to use on a weaver's loom and to come up with these designs. They became identified with certain clans in Scotland and Ireland, but they've actually taken off in all sorts of other parts of the world too. You can't wander around Scandinavia much without coming across people wearing tartans, plaids, as the Americans will call it, and you can't wander around North America, I suspect, although I've never been, without seeing the same thing. Particularly those parts of North America that were settled by lots of Scots and Irish, which notably Canada, the Appalachians. In those areas, they're very popular. There's a cat about to walk on my keyboard. No, she's changed her mind. Now, I want to use that model of the tartan to describe ideas and how they work and how they affect simple living. And on my social media post to publicise this, I'm going to use the Maxwell tartan because my great-grandmother was Euphemia Towers Maxwell. And so this is the family tartan. And it's very wonderful, but I would think that anyway. But if you have Scottish or Irish ancestry, you too may be able to find the tartan that matches your clan or the clan to which your family were a sept of. And that's not really what I want to talk about today, but it's an incredibly interesting subject if you ever want to delve into it a little bit. Now, ideas, I'm going to try and relate to a tartan. And so I'd like you to imagine those bands that go horizontally across the tartan. And I understand that depends which way up you hold the tartan, but bands that go horizontally represent the big sort of philosophical, political ideas that people have. I say people, I mean individuals, but also Societies, political parties have these things, it's true. Now, before you start to worry, this isn't going to be a party political thing. There are no party politics that come into Radical Simple Living podcast. I don't care what your politics are, to be honest. I have politics, that's for sure. But I'm not going to say that in order to want to live a radically simple life, you have to subscribe to one political ideal or another. So I want to talk about them in fairly broad terms. And some of those horizontal lines going across are lines which infiltrate through your life because you have political ideas. For instance, conservatism could be one of those bands, couldn't it? Liberalism might be another. You could say some of the bands are simple things like republicanism or Democrat supporting. Can't say democratism, can you? But Democrat supporting. You might, if you live in one of the other English-speaking countries that have Labour parties. You might say Labour is one of those bands going across, and Liberal might be one of them. So these bands are fairly political. And you might have some more unusual political bands that go through, like Anarchy might be one of them. I don't know. But anyway, those are the bands that go across. And we all sit on those bands in a way and take those ideas into our personal philosophy. But there are also other bands going down. And those bands cross those political bands going further down. So let's think of one example. Let's take Catholicism. Now, Catholicism is a band that might go down and it might cross with a Democratic band. It might cross with a Republican band. It might cross with a socialist band, if you like, because you can be a Catholic and your politics can also be very right wing or left wing. So, example, if I take Americans, I will note that Ron DeSantis is as a Roman Catholic, a very strong Roman Catholic. He always says that that's part of his where he comes from. But you also might find that Dorothy Day is a Catholic. Now, Dorothy Day, that you will associate with the Catholic Workers Party, was a very left-wing Catholic. And Ron DeSantis, I'm sure you agree, is a fairly right-wing Catholic. Both of them would argue they're strong Catholics. And yet both of them would argue from different political points of view. It's like on the tartan, where the band of Catholicism is coming down and crosses the band of socialism or crosses the band of conservatism. And that's where it produces the most intense colour. And you might have a certain religious view. You might be a Presbyterian or an Anglican or a Catholic or a Jew, or a Sunni Muslim, or a Shia Muslim, or a Sikh, whatever your religious beliefs are, they don't necessarily correlate with what your political views are. They cross over political views. So if I were to go to a meeting of Sikhs, for instance, I could probably find that there would be fairly left-leaning Sikhs that support the Democratic Party or Labour Party. And there might be fairly right-leaning Sikhs who would support the Republican Party or support the Conservative Party. So these things tend not to go in patterns. That's why I want to get this idea of the tartan as a way of society of having these different bands of beliefs going up and down. You could take as one of those downward lines libertarianism, couldn't you? You could say libertarianism is a vertical band, and sometimes it crosses fairly right-wing bands on the horizontal, and sometimes it crosses fairly left-wing bands. I've met people who claim to be very left-leaning libertarians and others that are fairly right-leaning libertarians. And so those things don't necessarily come together, do they? They can be at right angles to one another, but they do cross. And remember, it's where those lines cross that are the most interesting part of the tartan, and they're possibly the most interesting piece of people's life. Now, the main topic of this podcast, in case you were beginning to wonder what I'm talking about, is the big idea is about agrarianism. and where does agrarianism come from, and how does agrarianism relate to all these other philosophies that might carry on in life? Now, to start that discussion, you might want a definition of agrarianism, and you might have a vague idea if you don't consider yourself to be agrarian. You might have the vague idea that it's about farming. Well, it could be. It's really about people involved in using what we have and being productive about it. So it could be food production. That could be fibre production. It could be growing cotton. It could be growing flax. It could be producing wool. All of those would be agrarian activities. It could also be seen to embody forestry, growing trees for timber to make furniture or to make paper or to make firewood. All of those would be agrarian pursuits, and the broadest definition of agrarian pursuits would also include maybe hunting and fishing. So what unites all those things is what agrarianism is all about. It's not just recognising that those things have some thematic connection, but it's saying these are very important things. Now, if you would say to me personally, and I have vast belief in an agrarian system, you might say to me, what is more important, dealing with stocks and shares or producing food? And I would say producing food. You might say to me, what is more important, having land for golf courses and shopping malls, or having land for farm and forest? And I would say farm and forest. So these things clearly align me with the agrarian point of view, because I believe agrarian pursuits are the most important ones there are. Earlier this week, Jill Winger, who you may know as the producer of a wonderful podcast called Old Fashioned on Purpose, came up with these two statements. And she says you can divide human beings in all sorts of ways, but this is how I divide them into two camps. Camp one, those who think the natural world holds the answer to ultimate human flourishing. So I'll read that again. Camp one, those who think the natural world holds the answer to ultimate human flourishing. And camp two, those who believe the natural world is insufficient and must be improved on through technology. I'll give you a second one again. Those who believe the natural world is insufficient and must be improved through technology. Well, I would say that those people that find themselves in the first category, those that think that the natural world holds all the answers, we've just got to use it properly, would come in to the agrarian point of view. Now, you might argue that farming can use technology, and farming can use business, and farming involves investments, and farming involves all sorts of things. I would say, yes, it does, but in doing so, it has lost its agrarian content. If you had 1,000 acres that was made up of ranches or farms, where farmers, ranchers are doing their best to produce food, or to produce fibre, or even to produce non-foods like tobacco and tea and coffee and things like that in various parts of the world, and other medicinal substances too, you might argue that if they're doing that on a small scale, they fit into the whole agrarian idea. Or if they're doing it on a vast industrial scale, they're not. A farmer who has some chickens run around in his yard, or a homesteader that has chickens running around in his yard or in a coop, if there are too many foxes about, is performing an agrarian act. A vast shed full of tens of thousands of chickens, all being bred to produce eggs in the maximum amount of eggs in the minimum amount of time, is not agrarianism. That's industry. And whilst I'm not opposed to industry, I think the best industries are small industries. I think the best businesses are small businesses. And I think by getting too big, and by being trying to make agrarian pursuits too industrial, we're losing something. So I put myself firmly in the camp of being an agrarian believer, a follower of agrarianism. Now, how does this cross with those other things? Well, does it cross right and left? Yes, it does. If you ever watch delivery of things by Band-Aid, you will notice Band-Aid principally seems to be run by Willie Nelson and Neil Young and John Mellencamp. You will find that the delivery of the ideas of Band-Aid is very radical left-wing stuff, I think. Neil Young in particular talks about putting farming back in the hands of families and that big decisions on the farm should be taken by people around the family table and not around boardrooms in Chicago or New York. And that's an idea that maybe goes back to the earlier times when things like the Grange were operating, sort of a collective idea of agrarian responsibility, which is very wonderful. And you can also find right-wing agrarianists. You can find people that think going back to the land is the perfect thing to do. But when you examine their politics, you find they're incredibly right-wing. There's somebody on social media. I'm not going to mention his name here. If you want to message me, I will tell you, who subscribes to something called Christofascism or Christofascism, in which he claims that agrarianism can only operate fully in a fascist Catholic state. Well, that's an extreme point of view, but it's a view that people hold. So we have this agrarian idea that runs through history. And a lot of it goes back to the very early times when societies developed. We know that Britain, for instance, was an agrarian society until the Industrial Revolution, when all sorts of things happened that sent people away from the land and sent them to work in factories where they were working 14, 16 hours a day, even young children, for a wage. A generation or two earlier, they would have been working on a farm, and they might have been working on a farm that gave them some freedom to grow a little bit of food for themselves. That was quite a common thing to do. So there we have that agrarian idea. We know that in Scotland in particular, the idea of crofters, the idea that people would have this little bit of land and produce their food to it, which led to all kinds of ideas of self-sufficiency and homesteading later on. We also know that if we go back to the American Revolution, we have some conflicting ideas there, and we come across some very interesting characters indeed. We have the idea put forward by Hamilton of musical fame now, who I must admit, I've just read an enormous biography of Hamilton and I found him not a likeable man. But Hamilton saw that the new nation of the US, my husky has fallen asleep with a squeaky toy in her mouth, so that's good news. The idea was that Hamilton was putting forward was that America should be a country of industry and of commerce, of banking and of big business, of international trade, of development, all of those things. And then you had the idea that came forward from Jefferson. And I understand that Jefferson is a controversial figure and a flawed figure. But at various times in history, Jefferson had been embraced by the right. A lot of fairly hardline right-wingers hold Jefferson up as a wonderful example. But a lot of left-wingers do too. FDR was particularly fond of Thomas Jefferson. And Jefferson had this ideal of the states being a primarily agrarian country with people working on farms and business and banking and all those things were there, but they were not going to be the main part of what it's all about. So that's an interesting idea. And you notice that when I say Jefferson has been adopted by the right and the left, he has. Now, there's a lot of thing about Jefferson. People say he was a slave owner. Yes, he was a slave owner. And Hamilton wasn't a slave. No, but Hamilton didn't farm. He did work for a company that sold slaves at one point in his life. So you can look back in history and you can try and sort the good from the bad. I think it's a pretty grey area to go into personally. And I think if you take anybody from that time and examine their private lives and what they did too closely, you will come across things which are fairly unpleasant to our modern mind, and that's the way it is. I want to read you a little something. Right, these are a kind of summary of agrarianism by an academic, M. Thomas Ing. And this is what his points are. One, farming is the sole occupation that offers total independence and self-sufficiency. Okay, you might disagree with that, but that's weird, number one. Number two, urban life, capitalism and technology destroy independence and dignity and foster vice and weakness. Okay. Number three, the agricultural community, with its fellowship of labour and cooperation, is a model society. Four, the farmer has a solid, stable position in the world order. They have a sense of identity, a sense of historical and religious tradition, a feeling belonging to a concrete family, place and region, which are psychologically and culturally beneficial. The harmony of their life checks the encroachments of a fragmented, alienated modern society. Five, cultivation of soil has within it a positive spiritual good, and from it the cultivator acquires the virtues of honour, manliness, self-reliance, courage, moral integrity, and hospitality. They result from a direct contact with nature, and through that nature a closer relationship to God. The agrarian is blessed in that he follow the example of God in creating order out of chaos. Well, those aren't my words, those are the words of M. Thomas Ing, and I think what you would say right away, I think, and you would be justified in saying it, is that it's written in terms, he avoids saying that all farmers are men, but in saying farming develops manliness, it's a big insult to all those women farmers out there that do such a wonderful job. So he comes from Virginia, and he was an American academic, and those are some interesting ideas. M. Thomas Ing. Now, I would like you, if you can, to place those against the three objectives that I put about living a simple life back in the beginning of series one, when I said there are three things that are important. One, that by living a simple life, you avoid many of the complexities of modern living, which don't do people any good. Two, that in living a simple life, you're able to protect the environment, not only the environment of your own home and your own land, but the wider environment outside. And three, that in developing that simple lifestyle, you become spiritually enriched along whichever path you choose to follow. And I think there is some parallel there. I didn't come across these writings by M. Thomas Ing until quite recently. I wonder what M stood for. I don't know. I've just looked him up on Wikipedia and it doesn't say what M stood for. Maybe his parents called him M. Who knows? But those are interesting ideas to deal with. Now, what I hope to gain from this podcast is me getting across the idea of agrarianism being an important strand in that tartan that makes up the thoughts and beliefs that we weave together to make a society. But also the idea that you might be an agrarian. If you go back to those two statements at the beginning, the ones from Jill Winger, if you're a person that believes the natural world has all the things we need and we've just got to find a way of enriching the natural world and using excuse me, using the products of the natural world in a way that we can sustain society, or if you believe that society is pretty doomed unless we come up with some wonderful bit of technology to solve those problems. I don't know. Of course, like most ideas, you can take things a bit too far, can't you? If you take any political party, if you take any religious group, if you take any basic philosophical, sociological, religious, political idea, there are people that push it to extremes. And two people that pushed agrarianism to an extreme were Mao Zedong and Pol Pot. Now, Mao Zedong had the idea of the way China was going to succeed as a communist country was by getting as many people as possible to work on the land. And even if you worked in a factory, you would go out and work on the land. That was fine. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, really. I endorse that feeling. But he saw the enemy of agrarianism as being intellectualism. And he had things like, you know, the students rioting outside the homes of their teachers, and on one few occasions, teachers being thrown out of the window of their home by their students. That is taking it to a crazy extent, isn't it? Some people would argue that Pol Pot was a better example. I think he's even worse, because he hated intellectualism so much that he got doctors and teachers and professors out in the fields working, and took all their qualifications away from them, and took the calendar back to year zero. So all that would happen was people working on the land. These are extremes of agrarianism, and don't believe all agrarians are like that. If Thomas Jefferson were to walk on those killing fields in Cambodia, being run by Pol Pot and the Khmer Rouge, he would be horrified at what was taking place. Much like you may well be horrified if you went to see Thomas Jefferson's farm and saw slaves working on it. I do feel that if Thomas Jefferson had walked into an Amish farm today, somewhere in Eastern Ohio or Western Pennsylvania, I think he would be quite happy with what he found there. I think he would find the kind of system that operates there. He wouldn't be at all bothered by the fact that they were talking a kind of German, because in the time of the American Revolution, a whole range of languages were being spoken in the settlements that were there. But I think he would have understood that as getting something closer to what he was aiming at. So remember that tartan model. Remember whatever band of the tartan you go on, be it stretching across on those horizontal lines, whether it be right, left, conservative, socialist, whatever you like, that's fine. You also have those bands that go down. Your religious views will be one of those bands, but your view on agriculture, whether you're an agrarianist or not, will also have a big influence about how you see the other bits of your tartan working together. Okay, a lot more I want to say about agrarianism, so I will come back and do another podcast about it. And I will also include at the bottom of this a link to, I think I've done it before, a link to Neil Young making a little agrarian speech at the beginning of one of his Farm Aid concerts with Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, as they were for that moment in time. If I've done that before and you haven't watched it, do watch it, because what he says, I think, is heartfelt and very good. I've been very pleased to share your company here today, and I look forward to talking with you again. It's springtime here, so I apologise for the fact I'm not getting to the microphone quite as often as I should be, and I'm getting to social media even less. So if you could do me a favour, perhaps you would use your social media friends to tell them about this podcast. If they're interested in agrarianism, or interested in Thomas Jefferson or Hamilton or Pol Pot or any of the issues that I've thrown into this podcast, let them know they might have some interesting points to make. so please let them know about it. I will be very pleased to welcome you here again next time I do a podcast. And if you'd like to look back at the other topics I've dealt with in both series, you will find something of interest for you, I'm sure. Thank you very much for joining me. From all my quiet, well-behaved pets here, and from me, goodbye for now.